Hallo liebe Zuhörerinnen, liebe Zuhörer einer weiteren Folge der Interviews for Future. Heute mit einem Gast, auf den ich mich sehr freue, Mr. Bertrand Piccard. Hello Mr. Piccard.
Hello Dominik.
So, for the people watching or listening to this interview, you're a psychiatrist, but not only this, you do hypnotherapy and psychiatrist, that's a very special part. And you did the first journey around the globe in 1999 with a balloon, and then the same with a solar plane in 2015. It was, I'm sure, am I right?
And we started in 2015 and finished in 2016.
Okay. Ah, you crossed the Sylvester day.
Yes.
In the heaven, the sky. Okay, so, and then you're a founder of Solar Impulse, where you try to bring up, we come to this point. So that's the scale. If there's something you would say, want to say about yourself to make it complete?
Of course. There is a very tight link between my passion for exploration and the fact that I'm a psychiatrist and a medical doctor, because I also wanted to explore the human being, explore what makes people depressed or fulfilled, what makes them fail or succeed, and why it is so difficult to obtain a change in our world. So what I'm interested in is to explore different ways of thinking, different ways of doing. So sometimes it can be in the sky, with a balloon, but that was more my personal dream, or with solar impulse, solar powered airplane, flying with no fuel. That was really something I wanted to demonstrate as possible, because everybody was telling me it's impossible to fly on solar energy day and night around the world on an airplane. So I like to show what is possible. And in the topic of this interview, or the climate change problems, I think it's very, very important also to show what is possible, because people are prisoners of old ways of thinking, old ways of doing, and they don't understand how much they can change, how much they can improve all the new technologies, all the new solutions. And this is why I think we should have much more hope, but only if we act, not just if we remain in our wishful thinking. We need really to act, to introduce the changes, the solutions, and like this, fighting climate change can be very enthusiastic, can be a fantastic adventure, very, very useful for everyone.
And acting, not only reacting, really acting, going the way that's not made, a new way here and there and there.
Exactly.
Let's remember me on a poem from Basho. You know Basho? It's a Japanese, old ancient Japanese poetrist.
Yes.
He said, I translated it from German to English. It's translated from Japanese to German and to English. Maybe it's not completely right, but it's like, don't follow the footprints of the old masters, but look the direction they were looking for.
So I think it's a beautiful, beautiful sentence. I have to remember that. Yeah. Absolutely. Because as soon as we just look at the footprints of predecessors, we start to be dogmatic. We start to be prisoners of old ways of thinking. But if we look the direction, then we can use our own soul, our own passion in order to succeed in what we want to do. Yeah, I like very much this sentence.
That's very my first question I will change. It had been, what was the impulse for you, the starting of the view helping the climate or helping this little planet to exist. Now you connected it with these points you said, to look through the walls, behind the walls, don't look on the walls. What was the impulse for you, or maybe how it came that you grow like a person who wants to make new steps in the world, to make new ways, and like you said?
It's the legacy I received from my grandfather and my father. They both showed me how important it is to have scientific exploration in order to protect the environment and to protect humankind. My grandfather was the first man who reached the stratosphere. That was in 1931. And he invented the pressurized cabin to fly above the bad weather. And his goal was to demonstrate that it was possible to fly in thinner air where the speed could be faster and the fuel consumption could be lower. So his concern was already to be more energy efficient. And then my father made the deepest dive ever in the bottom of the Mariana Trench with his Batiscaf, 11 kilometers down. And his goal was to show that there was life at the bottom of the oceans at the time where the governments wanted to drop radioactive and toxic waste in the deepest trenches. So when he found the fish and three shrimps this depth, it was the proof that there were currents going from the surface down to the bottom, and that if you were throwing anything down there, it would be a disaster for the entire ocean. So all these milestones in the protection of the environment, thanks to technology, have shown me the path I'm on, the direction I'm on.
Okay, so your family was going this concrete this way, stepping behind the borders and looking on the planet.
Yes, completely. And my father in 1972 created the first European Ecological Institute and was telling me about pollution, about overpopulation, about the waste of natural resources, the waste of energy. And the problem is that in 1972, there were no real solutions to fight pollution, except degrowth, except cutting down all the industry. And that, of course, wouldn't work. So fortunately, today I can continue the work that my father has initiated for the environment, but with solutions, and solutions that are fortunately profitable, which means that all the industry, economy, finance, political leaders can use them.
That's interesting, because you said before, and it's what you do with Solar Impulse, to come in contact with these people that they are maybe not often think so far with politician and economy. Often politician economy is more bureaucratic or more not so the English word idealistic, I would say, maybe. And your way with Solar Impulse is to come there in contact. And what is the idea? So
yes, you know, politicians have one goal. It's to be reelected. Yes. And the best way to be reelected is to create jobs. And the people in finance and economy, their goal is to make money and to be successful in their business. So if you come to them and you tell them, we have to protect the environment, we have to care for biodiversity, we have to care about the climate, they will look at you and they will say, maybe, but it's not our priority. It doesn't help us. So you need to come with the same language. You need to come with the arguments that they can understand. And today, this is why I work with the Solar Impulse Foundation, to identify solutions that protect the environment in a financially profitable way, in order to tell to the politicians, with these technological solutions that protect the environment, you will create more jobs. You will boost the GDP. And I go to finance and business and industry people and tell them, if you diversify and if you use more of these technologies, you will make more money because it's more profitable. So in that sense, I think I can be useful, because the people that I want to convince are ready to listen to me because the arguments I have also help them. It's a win-win.
So it's interesting, because the idea of speaking the language of the person you talk with is a bit coming from being a psychiatrist too. Huh? And there's some idea behind. So if you have to a pressure, the people have a pressure, maybe the economy have the pressure to make money, and you have to show them another way. that the pressure don't goes high with make less money, make more ecologic.
Exactly. You have to help them to do even better. And this is something I was working a lot with my patients when I was making psychotherapy in my medical practice. The people, they come because they feel bad, but they're afraid to change.
Yeah.
So you need to give them confidence in change. You need to show them other directions. It's a bit like in a balloon. You know, this is why I love ballooning. It's a nice philosophy. Mm-hmm. You are pushed by the wind, in the direction of the wind. And if you drop some ballast, you can change altitude and you will find other layers of wind which have other directions. And in life, it's the same. We are pushed by the winds of life. And we need to drop the ballast of our certitudes, our habits, our beliefs, our common assumptions, in order to find other influences, other trajectories, other solutions, other strategies, other answers that will bring us in another direction, in a better direction, hopefully. And this is what I try to show today. It is not by continuing to do the same thing that we'll have another outcome. What we need to do is to replace what is polluting by the technologies that are protecting the environment. And if you do that, basically you will modernize your country. You will have efficient infrastructures. You will create jobs. You will make more profit. Because all these new technologies, and this is great news, but only since a couple of years, they pay for themselves. Just with the saving of energy, the saving of natural resources, it just pays for itself. So, of course, you need an investment in the beginning. And with the COVID crisis and all these trillions of dollars coming on the market for clean recovery, this is exactly where we have to invest. Yeah, we have to invest in these new infrastructures, replace basically what is inefficient and polluting by what is efficient and ecological.
Yeah, I think it's everything you make new, if it's ecologic or not, you need to invest. So maybe they are open for investing if the way of talking it is very good and very working. Let's say on this balloon metaphoric, maybe teaching the people or the economic and the politician too to drive with the wind and not to try to control the wind.
Yes, because now it's what they try to do. They try to impose the status quo and say, oh, it's not too bad, and maybe in the future we'll find other solutions. No, we need to act with the solutions we have today. And this is valid in every field. You know, there in the 1,000 solutions that the Solar Impulse Foundation is selecting and identifying, there's a solution coming from the oil industry, from Schlumberger. And they made a spin-off in order to drill for geothermia in the center of the cities. And this allows to install heat pumps in the buildings that used to have gas or oil heaters. So it's really interesting. Big corporations understand that they can make more money if they diversify. But the one who resists will disappear. This is the Kodak syndrome. Kodak disappeared because they wanted to fight against the digital pictures and keep their authentic paper pictures. So today, the one who are pioneers will be successful. The one who resists will disappear. And it's a disaster if they disappear because of all the unemployed people, because of financial crisis, because of all the negative impact it will have. This is why I'm not fighting against the oil industry. I'm not fighting against the industry. I just want to bring them solutions that pay for themselves, that will help them to be more efficient, that will help them to participate in the protection of the environment and be more successful. So it's very important to be inclusive and not exclusive. We need to be inclusive. We need to include all the actors. And this is, I believe, something that is not done well enough by certain groups of ecologist activists. They fight against the industry instead of helping them to be better?
Maybe it's not wrong to do both ways, but this is maybe a very big door, not go this way at the moment. As you say, the solutions, let's come to Solar Impulse Foundation. Your ground idea was that what you talked about, to bring solutions to economy, solutions for the economy that are ecologic, well-based. This is the core of the idea of Solar Impulse?
That's the core of Solar Impulse Foundation, yes. The second phase of my action. The first phase was symbolic. It was to demonstrate that clean technologies and renewable energies can achieve the impossible, like flying around the world with no fuel. And since that was a success, I could become more practical, I would say more down to earth, with the demonstration that protection of the environment was more profitable than the destruction of the environment. And this is when I launched this challenge 3 years ago of having 1,000 of these solutions that are profitable to protect the environment. And today we are at 900. So we are very, very close to the 1,000, which will allow the third phase, which is to bring these solutions to institutions, governments, heads of states, industry, big corporations, and give them the tools to do better. Because today it's clear that everybody is competing to reduce CO2 emissions in their speech. They want to be neutral in 2050 and 45 and even better 40. It's like an auction, you know, but nobody knows how to reach this auction. So what I want to do is to bring to all these actors the proof that there are enough solutions. And we look for these solutions in the field of water, of energy, construction, mobility, agriculture, industry. And it's fantastic to see what already exists, but people don't know it, because very often it's small companies who are not well known enough.
If there comes someone brings you an idea to bring this in, this 1,000 solution, is this to have to be a ready, well-made thing, or is there only the idea meant?
No, it needs to be absolutely credible today and ready to go on the market or already on the market.
Okay.
Not a vague idea. You know, if I go to see heads of states and I tell them there are 1,000 ideas to protect the environment, they will tell me, come back when they are a reality. I want really now to go with them and say, this is practical, concrete. It has been assessed by experts. It's really what works today and can make money today.
How wide is the scale of parts? You said from energy to what and so on. How far does it go? So where's the border, I would say, that you don't like, me too, borders, but you have to make some points. Maybe only communication tool that brings, as an example. Is this included, or is it only technical tools, or how is it defined?
It is technologies, products, devices, materials, systems, something very, very practical. So when I say a system, it can be a smart grid. When you integrate renewable energy production with storage, with the right distribution at the right moments to the people who need it at that moment, that's a system. So that's can receive the label of the foundation. And it's not only for rich countries. You also have these microgrids where you have solar energy, battery, a pump for agriculture, irrigation, some plugs for the light in the house and so on. And like this, you can give access to electricity in very, very remote and poor areas. So it's basically available for absolutely everyone. And what is fascinating is to see that these type of things, they create local wealth, local jobs, social developments, peace, stability. It's a new way of thinking, because until now, the goal was always to produce more. And today, the new goal is to be efficient. That means to produce less, to use less, but in such a better way with better technologies and better service that everybody can win.
Oh, that's interesting, because this economic growth idea we have in this world is more money, more money, more money, more money, more production for more money, and so on and so on. We know where it ends. And you say you want to help to make profit too. It's included. So, but this on this thinking of growth, of economic growth, those swapped out of the masses, put in the quality or the effects maybe.
Yeah, but you see today you have a bit two tendencies. One is degrowth, mm-hmm. fighting against growth because we are polluting everything. And I understand that people want to stop polluting. But when you fight against growth, you're going to induce social chaos, unemployed people, riots, and it will end up by a revolution of people who have lost their jobs and have nothing. I'm not promoting degrowth. On the other hand, it's the so-called illimited quantitative growth is something that leads to an ecological disaster. So it doesn't work. Why it doesn't work? Because people want to sell always more with cheaper price, so smaller margins. So they have to sell more and more and more in order to make profit. And it destroys the environment and the future of humankind. So I believe that these two ways don't work. What you need to introduce is what I like to call the qualitative growth. Mm-hmm. Qualitative growth is where you create jobs and you make money by replacing what is polluting by what is protecting the environment. So you can make more money by producing less. This is important. You introduce something, for example, you have a company in France called Engie. What's the new business model? They help the consumers to, it's an energy company, it's a utility. So they help the consumer to consume less energy, mm-hmm. and they earn money on the efficiency. It means the consumer, they share the profit of the saving with the consumer. So it's very interesting because they sell less energy and they make more money and the consumer saves money also. That's the type of business model of a qualitative growth.
Okay, this part, maybe it's interesting to look a bit deeper. We don't have the time in this interview because it's very interesting how in the finer scales this work. So back to solar impulse. Are there some, or maybe one example you can show that came to these 1,000 solutions and made the next step in industry, in politics, whatever, and as a good example for what you want to do and how it really works?
Yes, you have, for example, a chemical company in Germany called Covestro. Mm-hmm. And Covestro has developed for us a new insulation foam for the batteries and for the cockpit. And this insulation foam is about 20% more efficient than any other foam. And they are now selling it to insulate refrigerators and to insulate walls of houses in order to be more efficient. That's a nice example. The type of engines we had on Solar Impulse were brushless, sensorless motors, 97% of efficiency. This type of engines are used on ceiling fans in India by a startup who got example on our engines, and they saved 75% of electricity. Multiplied by the billions of fans in Southeast Asia and India, you see the huge difference that it makes. But these are just some examples that are derived from Solar Impulse. But most of the 1,000 solutions that we have selected are made by startups or big corporations or research labs everywhere in the world. And they all have the same philosophy of being more efficient. And sometimes, you know, just logical. There are 20,000 landfills in the world, 20,000 places where people are throwing all their garbage. It produces a lot of methane. And the methane is 80% more dangerous than CO2 for climate change, also because it lasts for much longer in the atmosphere. And you have a startup called WAGA, who is recovering the methane from the landfills. They are injecting it in the gas pipes or burning it to produce electricity. And when you burn methane, you obtain CO2, which is 80 times less dangerous. So you see, just what has been done in the past with landfills, which is completely stupid, can be used today as an advantage, as an asset to produce energy instead of letting this methane go in the atmosphere.
It's an interesting point because it's very good on this part you told. On the other part, can it come to this point here and there that people say, I thought about don't putting all the trash on these places, but now we have a solution to use the methane, so we put the trash on this place, to those side effects, how you deal with those things?
Yes, today, with the circular economy, you can do better with trash than just to put it in landfills. So what is already in the landfill can be transposed into energy, transformed into energy, but the waste that we have today can have a recycle, can have a second life, can become resources for something else. One of the solutions that we have labeled is a platform where people who have waste to throw away are connected with people who are looking for these type of materials. So for example, you have somebody demolishing a house, you have a lot of concrete that is just to be thrown away, and you have companies who buy this or recover this concrete in order to transform it into sand and make new concrete, or to make a road, or to whatever. So the circular economy is something that is just logical. It's something that you recover instead of throwing away. But it's another mindset we need to have. Because in the past, we were producing, using, throwing away. Today, we need to produce, to use, to reuse, to use differently, to do something with it. It's a mindset where people need to think a little bit, need to be a little bit smarter. This is why I like the word smart grid, because up to now, we have a stupid grid, just completely inefficient. We have to understand that today we waste 75% of the energy we produce, half of the food, probably about 60 or 70% of the natural resources, and 95% of the waste. The waste are even wasted. Yeah. So this mentality of trying to be more efficient and looking for the solutions that are profitable and push this efficiency forward, of course, it needs to be a bit more clever than what people were in the past. And I love this way of having a lot of people that are looking for solutions, looking for new technologies in order to improve the state of the world.
So you're very motivated, and for the reasons how you tell are logic for sure, but you're very motivated to do these things. It comes out of a feeling. But for sure, you have the same things on the balloon, maybe as an example. You have to be effective there because it wouldn't work with a balloon with no being effective in different things. So you have it in your feeling deep. It's easy for you to have this motivation. There's some other people, maybe they say, we don't have to do anything. Look on the Chinese side, they build coal mines and so on. So what can we do? No solution to do anything. I'm so little, maybe. What do you say to those people?
If the goal is only to protect the environment, I agree that it's very, very discouraging to see what other countries and other big countries are doing in terms of pollution. And you can feel that your own action will have no result. But you can see it exactly the other way around, which is what I try to promote. Just look at what is more profitable because it is more efficient. And today, if you insulate your house, you can be almost energy neutral and it will be profitable. Of course, you need to invest a bit of money, but usually you never earn money without investing something. And after a few years, your house will cost you much less, even if the Chinese continue to use coal or the Americans are continuing to use fossil fuels. Whatever the others are doing, you can be cleaner, you can be more efficient, and this makes you more profitable. This is why my entry door is the economical growth, not production growth, not more, but earning money by protecting the environment. That's my entry point.
That's the point in speaking with the economy, with the politicians. What's the point speaking to a normal person where these part of being efficient is maybe not so interesting, maybe more not to have stress and to jump in my SUV, drive to the supermarket, drive back these 500 meter. It's less efficient for sure in what I have to pay for the oil and so on. But it's easier. And often I think the normal people outside there, they have this point of, and they're not interested, these kinds of people who are not interested so much or only say, okay, like I said, oh, the Chinese have to do first before I do, because the economy is the problem, more the feeling of life, the easiness of life.
Yes. You speak about jumping in your SUV. You can jump in your electric car or your hydrogen car.
Not so easy, because you don't have so many possibilities. Here where I live, I don't have a car. But here where I live, if I have a car, I have to drive 100 meter to make the fuel inside. For electric car, I have to drive to the next city today here. So it's not so easy sometimes.
No, it's true. It's the beginning of something new. Mm-hmm. And this is why the government need to do something. Because the solutions exist, we have to accelerate the implementation of these solutions. And for me, what is very important is to understand the role of regulation. The regulations of today are based on old technologies. The standards of particles that can be emitted by a car, the fuel consumption, the particles of plastic or gum emitted by the tires or the brakes. All this is based on very old technologies. So you have a lot of people who say, maybe I pollute, but what I do is legal. I respect the regulation. But the regulation must change. The regulation must match with the cleanest technologies of today in order to push these technologies on the market. So today it's clear that if you allow a big SUV to use 12 or 15 liters of gasoline per 100 kilometers and to emit as much CO2 as you want, there will never be an improvement. So you need to push these new technologies by putting regulation and standards that prevent the most old and polluting systems to continue to destroy the environment and facilitate the arrival of the new ones. Okay. So, and this is something that is very, very useful when you see the action of the young people, the climate strike, the youth movement. They have pushed governments to act, because governments are afraid to act. They're afraid to say, we will ban thermal engines, diesel engines in the center of the cities. They're afraid to see the reaction of people. But when you have all the youth that is protesting and demonstrating in the streets, then the governments can say, look, the population is asking for it, so we're going to do it. So it's a big help to have public demonstrations, public pressure on the governments. And like this, the guy who wants to go at the supermarket, he can take an electric car instead of a SUV or whatever. This is just an example.
So a bit on this point, you have the pressure of the people on the streets, and then they press the politicians to somewhere. But to where? And then there comes another part, maybe your part, to open a door for a solution. Then they can can go away from this pressure from the streets and can use this door and make better solutions for this world in the end.
Yes, because today the worst thing is to resist and to remain with the old polluting technologies we have. So you have the pressure of the streets on the politicians. The politicians can be a bit tougher in the regulations in order to protect the environment. They put standards of CO2 emissions and standards of particles and standards of whatever polluting stuff much tougher. And because there are solutions like the one that the Solar Impulse Foundation has selected, then we can all shift to these technological solutions, which make our entire society much more efficient. But you see, if you prevent people to do something, if you ask them a lot of sacrifice, if you tell them you're not allowed to take your car, you'll have everybody against you.
Yes.
And this is what happened in the last 50 years. In the last 50 years, the ecologists, the green activists, have promoted far too much degrowth, sacrifice in terms of comfort, reduction in terms of mobility, and people did not follow. People did not follow, and this is why we're in such a big shit today, is because we have waited far too long in order to do something. But you cannot push people to make behavioral sacrifice. You need to give a solution to the people in order for them to change with enthusiasm. Otherwise, they won't do it.
Yeah, and
you need to offer better. You need to offer better to the people, not less.
Yeah, and this motivation you bring is a kind of virus. If you really motivated, the people take it. How important is it in these times we are living in that we have pioneers and visionary thinking?
It's always important. Otherwise, we never move ahead. There's a time where the pioneer was the one who invented the printing machine. Maybe the first time it's the guy who made a fire and understood how we can reignite a fire in order to have some flames in his cave. He's a pioneer, the one who started to make agriculture instead of just hunting. He was a pioneer. So you always need to open these new ways of doing and thinking in order to have better. Now you can ask, is the guy who used oil for the first time, was he a pioneer? Well, I would say yes. 120 years ago, the quality of life of humankind increased a lot thanks to oil. Mm-hmm. And it was even the discovery of oil that stopped the extinction of the whales, because the whales were hunted for the fat, which was transformed into oil to have the public lighting in the cities. But what was good with 1 or 2 billion people consuming a little bit of oil became a disaster with 8 million people consuming a lot of oil. So the pioneers of oil now have to be replaced by the pioneers of renewable energies, the pioneers of clean technologies, the pioneers of better regulations, more modern regulation, and so on. We need to keep on the evolution, otherwise we'll be really in trouble.
Yeah, but every time as human beings existing, you have sometimes these pioneers, and if the pioneer makes something, it's changing the world. Like, they got, good pioneer, but all the other, it's more here and there, and then make an invention and it's good, and the people use the inventions, okay. And for sure, it's not nice to sit at home without light. Yes. And it's good to have pioneers to invent light, maybe like this. But now we are in the situation, it's not about not good to have, because it's not good don't having this planet. It's really completely about staying alive. So maybe is there more pressure on this mankind to do new, and so to give more pioneers more place to work, to like you do with your solutions.
Now, I agree with you. If we don't change, if we have no evolution, if we have not enough pioneers pushing and not enough heads of states putting the correct regulations and not enough people in the industry who are using the new technologies, then we'll be in trouble. The quality of life will collapse. And what is for me very, very strange is to observe how many people fight against the pioneers, how many people resist to the change. So you have selfish people, you have people who don't know, you have people who are afraid, you have people who follow the orders, you have people who don't know how they can save their company if they need to be ecological. Okay, you have all these people who have some excuse. But you also have a lot of people who are clearly psychopathic. You know, psychopaths are people in psychiatry who have no compassion, no feeling of guilt, no emotions for the suffering of others. And you have about, the statistics show that there are 3% of psychopaths in the population, but they tend to concentrate to a level reaching 20% in the highest positions in economy, finance, and politics. And this is dangerous because it means that for their own private interest, they are ready to have ecological disasters in other places of the world, millions of climate refugees, billions of people who will suffer. And we need to keep this in mind when we look at who is taking decisions. And we should not accept as the population to be led by psychopaths. We need, and this is why it's important to have demonstrations in the cities. It's important to have the youth mobilizing itself. It's important really to say each time we don't agree and demonstrate and show it. Otherwise, we will be led by people who are only doing their personal interest and not the interest of humankind.
And it's important that you check a person who wants to become a pilot for an airplane with people inside, that he could do this, that he don't maybe take drugs or whatever. And psychopath is not only coming out from the childhood. There's some MOA. I'm not completely in this theme, but you know, they have some parts of in the brain, sticking in the brain. You can check if is a person a psychopath in a scale or not. Yes. So if it's not only maybe the pressure to bring these people out of these positions, to giving on the little young people on the streets to make pressure without, maybe to make a rule, like I have a rule with the pilot or with the bus driver. I have rules that you can't be a bus driver with this and that mindset in a way.
Yeah, the rule is a bit the democracy. We try to have the common sense of the people elect the best leader. But it's true that very often we fail. Very often we fail or it's misleading and we elect the wrong people. That's for sure.
Yeah,
but in an ideal world, you are right. The politicians should have, or even the CEOs or chairmen of big companies should have a psychological assessment before sitting in their responsibilities. But this is wishful thinking. I don't think it will happen. So I tried really to focus on what is practical, what is concrete, what we can really implement today. And if you tell to a psychopath, you can do better, you can create more jobs, you can have more money, you can make more profit. And by the way, it also protects the environment. Maybe it will work.
You feed him.
Maybe it will work. Yeah. This is why I believe a lot in the technological improvement, in the renewable energies, in the energy efficiency, because it's very, very practical and it can include a lot of people into that direction instead of excluding them.
I will pick up something we had a few minutes before. That sometimes you come back to what you are when you reflect and when you reflect how you're interacting with the society, with the economy, and so on. It's very interesting. You're a hypnotherapist, and I think hypnosis is a interesting kind of a metaphoric for this, because I will pick up something I read about your flight with a solar plane that you used hypnosis for. different things. One is for not to sleep too much. You take the hypnosis to go down, to relax, restore. And the other part was to stay awake.
Yes.
So to make the metaphoric to the society, if I need food, some other industry has to make it for me, and so much that I really have to can grab it when I want. And so we have 40-50% of food too much. If I want to eat, I can order it. So it's not nothing bad about ordering. It's nothing bad about industry in principle. But our society, I think, goes too far in these points. So to come back to the metaphoric, like you, if you would not use hypnosis, if you would use uppers and downers, maybe cocaine, to stay awake in the flight. So in the end, okay, to stay awake with cocaine for a few days, I think it's working, but in the end, it's not healthy. In the end, it's not a really solution. It makes another problem, like our interaction with this world. Don't take the hand in the earth to make some food, and it's less food, but enough. Do you think this metaphoric can tell us something, that we find more solutions in ourselves, not the technical one, that's a different for sure, but more solutions of how we can think this planet, how we can think our interaction with this planet, and in the end, society and ourselves?
Yeah, you see, explorers, pioneers, big adventurers, they think like that. Mm-hmm. They know that a lot of skills, potential resources are within ourselves. But it is not what the society is teaching. Our society is teaching in school, in the university, almost everywhere, that we have to do the same, that the government has to protect the people, that we need to keep our habits, that we need to continue living as we have always done. In other words, that we have to be afraid of the unknown, that we have to avoid the doubts about the question marks. We need to go into something that is statistically proven and reproducible. And this is exactly the opposite of what the pioneers and the explorers like to explore. What I love to do is to go outside of the boundaries, outside of the habits, outside of the certitudes. And this gives a lot of confidence, because you see how much human beings can find all the skills inside of themselves. But if you are taught not to explore yourself, if you are not pushed into personal development, maybe into a spiritual approach of life, then you will miss so much of it. And this is why I think that our society is not working at the level it should work. We are not calling our certitudes into action. We are not teaching people to be pioneers and explorers and to discover how much they can create and how much more performance they can have if they start to be aware of themselves, if they feel that they're alive in this on this planet and use this feeling of being alive in the present moment. So you see, we can go from profitable technological solutions to spiritual development.
Yes.
But what we should avoid is to remain in the status quo, sleeping in the automatism as a robot, because human beings are led to be robots. Like a computer, you press the same button, you always have the same reaction of the software. And when people are sleeping like this, of course we can change nothing.
You're teaching hypnosis. Do you sometimes in this teaching connect these things, maybe by telling the people, hey, you take yourself, you take your breath, you have your breath, and you can use this breath. And the breath is not only a part of yourself, it's to make the bridge to the ontological environment, it's nature. So if you stand naked under the shower, there's nothing left. There's only nature standing. Yes. But the breath is included. So
yeah. So you're right. We don't teach people enough to live as creative and performant human beings. We don't teach people to use their skills and their potential enough. So, and we let people sleep in certitudes and habits and old beliefs instead of telling them how much more performant they could be. But this is a question of education. Maybe, I don't know, governments don't like to have the population thinking too much. It will be too difficult to control everybody if everybody was starting to think much more.
Yeah, it's my step I want to make when no one stepped to bring up that politics or they start to do this, to talk with the people like they are human beings. We see it in Germany. I don't know like it's in Switzerland or France or what else. But in Germany, we see it. They talk with the people like with robots. It's like they know, okay, if economy works, everyone is happy. But that's not true. It's important that economy works, yes, for sure. But happy I am with myself, with my feeling in my body, and my feeling in my mind, and how I can feel free or secure. It's different, for sure.
Yes, and it's true that hypnosis is a psychological technique that helps people to build what we call the safe place, the inner security, inner comfort, an experience of fulfillment. And so for you and for me, it's so obvious. And the role of an interview like this is to help other people to start to wake up in their life, to start to get the awareness of what they are, not only what they have, but what they are, and how they could evolve, how they can develop their skills, their performance, their potential. And if you do that, you connect not only with yourself, but you connect with the other people around you, you connect with nature. And of course, it becomes obvious that you start to preserve nature instead of destroying it, because you have just a bigger scope, bigger range of awareness.
And it's funny how close we are in our deeper states with nature. I've seen it with my students where I made hypnosis too. The safe place is mostly a natural place. Sometimes it's a home like this, okay, for sure. But it's never an industry or like this or a tank, safe place being in a tank safe, no. And it's a beach, you know, no? These things. And it's maybe we... Do you think, and to come there on the end, maybe that we started with being in the nature as we were sitting in the caves, walking through the landscape, inviting the fire, started to go there where human beings really have to be, maybe in a culture, in a society, with technique and so on. But maybe we drove too far. So we are standing now in a world where we don't feel good. We have so high grades of psychological problems in the rich countries. We have so high grades of ecological problems. So maybe we have to the pendulum a bit backwards.
Yeah, you know, people don't miss what they don't know, but they miss what they already have if they lose it. So it's always very difficult to go backward. If you have no computer and no smartphone, you don't miss it. You just have normal telephone cabins. You put €1 and you call who you want. But today, if you suppress computers and smartphones, you have a revolution. So this is why I don't believe that we can lose what we have to protect the environment. It will not work. We have to reorient the direction in which we are into quality, awareness, consciousness, compassion, efficiency, new technologies. And this is what I believe. Maybe there are other ways to do. You have people who say that anyway, what's going to happen is a general collapse, that there is no way to save humankind, and that you will have 4 billion or 5 billion out of 8 of inhabitants of the planet who will die. There will be a revolution, there will be pollution, there will be a general collapse, and then it will start again at a lower level for some other millions of years. I don't know. I just want to avoid that. I think it would be a disaster. It would bring far too much suffering on this planet. So I just hope that human being will be clever enough to save himself, because at the end, it's only humankind that is in trouble. If we disappear, everything else will continue in a perfect way. So we just have to save ourselves and be more clever and stop to damage our environment. That means the place where we live. We would not think about destroying our house if we need a house, but we're thinking of destroying nature when we need nature. So it's ridiculous. So I try to avoid this collapse. I try to avoid this disaster by bringing solutions. I don't know who will be right at the end. We'll see.
Yeah, but this is the way of life. You can't plan it completely. It will come different, maybe better. This is something you talk about. This, you see, okay, it's too much dystopia in this communication about what will come. What will come if we don't do anything is really dystopic, okay, for sure. But there's the utopia. Maybe like if we put out the cars of the inner cities, it's easy to tell it like, you have to put out the cars out of the inner cities and then you don't have parking space and you have to walk long way. Okay, dystopia. But in the other way, to communicate it like, then you have playing children in the day in the middle of the city. How nice is that? And many people say, okay, there's a solution, a way of going, maybe of growing adult, not thinking only on what's now good for me, thinking, okay, what's good for the future and not bad for myself.
Yeah, you have to show a vision of the future that is desirable, that people can look for.
And want,
exactly. Exactly. Now it needs some psychology, because it's clear that if you prevent all the private mobility, I think you'll have a lot of problems. Maybe it's better to offer electric or hydrogen, or let's say it's anyway electric, but electric with battery or electric with hydrogen ways to move. Maybe it's a step that will help to be cleaner, and people who need their private mobility, they can have it anyway. We have to be careful in the extremes, to ban everything or to push everything. Let's try to adapt also to the pace of change that people are accepting.
If you communicate with politicians, do you feel, I think you do it since a while, do you feel that there is a change coming in this scale?
Yeah, because yes, you have pioneers everywhere, also in politics. But I give you an example. We have a partnership with the region Grand Est. It's northeast of France. Mm-hmm. It's big territory with several departments, and we have a partnership with them to help them to provide solutions for them to become more clean and more efficient. But there are some legal obstacles that prevent to move ahead. For example, we want to install on the vehicles of the regional government a module that has been labeled by the Solar Impulse Foundation that reduces the particles by 80% and reduces the fuel consumption by 20%. It costs 500 euros and the payback time is a few months. So it's really worth it. But the regulation today tells that if you install such a module like that, you have to certify the entire car again because it's like a new engine, which is wrong. It's a little module, big like a chocolate box.
You can put it on the car, no problem.
On your thermal engine. Mm-hmm. And if you can avoid to certify your car again, everybody will install it. But if you need to bring your car to a new certification, nobody will use it. Mm-hmm. So what happened? We wrote to the Minister of Transport and the Minister of Environment in France to ask to modify this regulation in order to allow these people to use this new module. We'll see the result. We're in the middle of the discussion today.
Okay. How are you connected in Germany with this? with Solar Impulse and what you're doing? Is first doors opened or deep inside? What's the way? Because Germany, for sure, it's for me interesting, or for our listeners interesting, because it's a German podcast.
Absolutely. I did a lot of speeches, a lot of conferences, a lot of political meetings in Germany, but it's true, maybe because of the language, that I'm more known in France and we have more partners in France than in Germany, but it can change. We just made a partnership with Deutsche Telekom in order to identify solutions that can be used in the IT business in order to be more efficient and more ecological friendly. So this will open actions in Germany. And it's true that we are also looking for more contact in the media in order to speak to every people in Germany and Austria about the 1000 solutions, all these technologies that can be implemented everywhere. So we need to open a little bit more our actions in Germany.
And the main part is the communication.
Yeah.
For sure. You're from French part of Switzerland. So
yes.
Okay. I have many, many questions, but maybe I look before on the clock because it's 5 minutes before 12. I have time. You don't, I think.
No, because I have another meeting at 12.
So then.
How long is your program?
It's like I wanted. Sometimes it's between 45 minutes and the longest was 1.5 hours. Like
this. Yes.
Because I can talk about these things maybe for 2-3 hours, but most.
But unfortunately, it's true that I will have to stop to respect the schedule with the next meeting.
So sometimes better to make two parts and it's smaller. Yeah. Then if you have a line in the end, now there's a free space. Something to say to the German people.
Yes, what I believe today is that exploration is not so much about discovering new territories, because we have discovered all the territories, even on the moon. I think exploration is about creating the conditions to have a better quality of life on this planet. It should be to explore new ways of doing, new ways of thinking, new economical rules, new political regulations, implementation of new technologies. This is the exploration of today. And I hope that this passion for exploration can be shared by as many people as possible in order to improve quality of life on this planet. It's worth it.
Yeah, Mr. Picard, that's a nice ending line. So thank you very much for this interview.
With pleasure, Dominic. With pleasure.